So years ago, when I had just started college, I went out to eat with my friend and her mother. We went to an Indonesian restaurant, and I ordered some dish, I don't remember which one, that came with a whole chicken leg and thigh. I ate my chicken, and since we were still sitting and talking, I picked up the bone, and I started to gnaw the cartilage off the ends, which, if you don't know what that is, it's that white crunchy stuff that's kind of a cap on either end of the bone. And my friend stared at me in revulsion. "What are you doing?" she said. "Are you eating the cartilage?" So before I continue the story, I do want to make two notes. One, this friend in question is what I think the kids these days call Hapa. She's biracial, half East Asian and half Caucasian. Also, she's a vegetarian. So it's entirely possible that just watching me eat chicken was super gross. And eating the cartilage was just like the straw that broke the camel's back, and she had to say something. So her mother, who's the one who contributed the East Asian genes to her kid, was like, "Oh, don't worry about it, honey. It's a cultural thing." Well, this was news to me. I had no idea that some people thought that eating cartilage was gross. So is this a cultural thing? So that night, I went home, and I messaged all my Asian friends, and I asked them, "Do you eat the cartilage off your bones?" And they all said, "Oh, yeah, totally, but not if white people are around because it freaks them out." So that's a story that I use to illustrate how there are times and ways and places in which we don't bring our full selves to the table. We cover up tattoos, we change our accents, we change our hair, we put on a tie or we put on a skirt, we avoid certain topics of conversation. We hide our food or we only bring out parts of it that we know are accessible, that we know aren't too smelly or too ugly or too weird. Just like we cover up the parts of ourselves, our bodies and our personalities that we think might be too smelly or too ugly or too weird. Which kind of confuses me a little because, I mean, food, I think, is the ultimate common ground in the sense that we all need to do it every day. We all need to eat. "Oh, what do you mean? I'm hungry again. I have things I need to do. What do you mean I need to feed myself?" We all have bodies, and we need to fuel these bodies, these fleshy sacks of blood and bile and subatomic particles that we inhabit are made up of the food that we eat. We break down carrots and celery and beef and bread and milk, unless any of those things I just named aren't things that you eat because you're vegan or you have a dairy allergy or you're gluten-free. I want to acknowledge that there is a diversity of eating habits in the world, but the point is that we eat food, we break it down, and we turn them into us. And that's amazing. It blows my mind. Every day it blows my mind. But food is also more than the building blocks of our bodies. Food is a form of identity. It is a culture. There's a saying I heard once that goes, "If you want to know how much an immigrant has assimilated, you check the pantry." Food is the last thing to go. Food is what connects us to where we came from, how we grew up, how we were raised, our ancestors, our parents, our grandparents. And because it is also this aspect of identity, it is also where we become divided, because we all need to eat, but how we eat differs. The form and shape it takes when we turn these raw materials into food and what we choose to put into our bodies versus what we leave out. That's when food takes on meaning. Let's take rice, for instance. There's different kinds of rice. There's brown rice versus white rice. There's black rice, red rice, purple rice. There's short grain, medium grain, long grain. There's sticky rice, sweet rice. And when you demonstrate a preference for one over the other, you are making a statement. I mean, that's definitely how it is among, like, East Asian people. And that's not even getting into preparation. How much water you use, or maybe you use broth instead of water, whether or not you steam it or make it into a pilaf or paella or risotto. I mean, gosh, it's just rice, but it comes in so many varieties. And you see these arguments all over when it comes to food. Sugar or no sugar in the cornbread? Does chili have beans in it? Is palm oil vegan when harvesting it results in loss of habitat for orangutans? Should we eat animals at all? This very simple thing that unites us all is actually a very big, complex issue that reaches into every facet of our lives, because it's not just food. It's also identity. What we eat and how we eat it tells us a lot about ourselves and each other. Which now brings me to the potluck. Yes, there is a potluck today. That was a demand that I made, a condition of my preaching here today. Because the potluck is part of this sermon. So, how many of you here have been to a Unitarian Universalist potluck before? Just making sure. Now, I'm going to describe my experience of the typical UU potluck and what kind of food there is, and you can tell me if it seems right. I will make the note that I've never been to a UU potluck outside of the Bay Area, so maybe what I'm about to describe reflects also the culture of this area as well as UU culture overall. Maybe it's different at UU potlucks in the South or the Midwest. What I tend to see at UU potlucks is a lot of salads. Is that true? Yeah, okay, I see a lot of nods. Yeah, coleslaw, kale and quinoa, that's really popular. Green leafy salads, okay. There's often beans, could be baked beans, could be a bean salad. Combine the beans and the salad. Okay, I'm seeing some more nods, that sounds familiar. Sometimes there's a tray of mac and cheese. Sometimes there's cheese and crackers. Dessert is usually cookies, but sometimes there's a cake or pie or tart, and there's almost always, especially recently, a gluten-free option. And I don't want to forget the ingredients lists, because Unitarian Universalists want to be really helpful in case you have like a food allergy or some kind of dietary restriction. So the homemade food almost always has an index card listing the ingredients so that you know if there's like nuts or wheat or dairy. Does that also sound familiar? Okay. All right. Oh, nice. Okay. So what that tells me is that Unitarian Universalists try really hard. We are trying. We want to be healthy, hence all the salads and the beans. You know, I heard someone once bring a salad to a potluck and say, I bring the things that I wish I would eat more often. We want to be helpful and thoughtful and inclusive. And somewhere in all of this aspirational thinking, I do wonder sometimes if what's getting lost is, but you know, what about who we already are? Because you want to know the truth. I hate salads. I didn't grow up eating them, and I don't really understand them. Why am I eating a plate of raw leaves covered in olive oil? And why am I eating it with a fork? That's the thing that I really don't understand. Like, I stab the leaves, and I pick up two, and one of them falls off the fork immediately. So nowadays, if I eat salads, if possible, actually, I try to eat them with chopsticks. And if you have not tried eating salads with chopsticks, it is way better than eating salads with a fork. I'm just going to tell you that right now. So you want to know what I love that's not salads, because I don't like salads? I love pork belly. And I don't mean bacon. Believe it or not, for most of my life, I actually didn't like bacon, which I think is actually just because I ate a lot of like bad bacon. Anyway, I mean pork belly the way my family cooks it, which is in a long braise with soy sauce and ginger and star anise and cinnamon. You cook it for hours and hours, and you know it's done when it falls apart when you poke it. Do I bring this to you, potlucks? You know, for a long time, no, because I was afraid that people might not like it. It's like too fatty, it's really meaty, I should bring something vegan, you know, I should be inclusive. So I would bring salsa and chips. You know, something that everyone can enjoy. That laughter tells me that this is a familiar train of thought for many of you. Well, I've come to the conclusion that we can't be a community if we're not authentic with each other. And being authentic means being honest about who we are now. We hide parts of ourselves because we're afraid of what other people will think, you know, that we won't get that promotion, that we'll lose friends, that we'll rock the boat. But friend, I am here to tell you that that boat needs rocking. We will not bring about beloved community by hiding parts of ourselves, assimilating to the dominant culture, participating in racist, patriarchal, and ableist structures. As Audre Lorde said, the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. Beloved community is one in which all people can share in the wealth of the earth. Beloved community is a community in which all forms of discrimination, bigotry, and prejudice are replaced by an all-inclusive spirit. An all-inclusive spirit. A seat for everyone at the table. There is a seat for everyone at the welcome table, regardless of who they are or where they come from or who they love. That is what I was told the first time I walked into a Unitarian Universalist church, and I still believe it. I believe it. And I mean, I'm not saying there's not going to be struggle, because there is struggle in community, just like there's struggle at every potluck. Struggle because there's 12 desserts and only 3 entrees. Struggle because there's not enough vegetarian food, or not enough gluten-free food, or not enough peanut-free food. Struggle as we find the time to make an extra dish. Struggle from the people who miss service in order to heat the food and set up the tables. Struggle as people stay afterward to help clean up. Struggle as we make awkward small talk with people we don't normally talk to. As we try new foods that we've never tried before. As we eat food that we're not used to or that we don't honestly don't really like. I mean, all these salads. As we eat struggle as we try to maintain healthy eating habits when there's a giant pile of brownies right there. Struggle with eating disorders and food politics and hunger strikes and the knowledge that there are hungry people right outside this door or right alongside us for whom this will be their only real meal today. Communities struggle, and that struggle brings us closer together. Our willingness to be together in spite of that struggle opens us to new possibilities. Our willingness to be together in spite of that struggle opens us to the diversity of the world. Our willingness to be together in spite of that struggle is what brings us closer to beloved community. And it starts with bringing your honest self, your real self, and making space for someone else's honest self, their real self. We're all in this together. My liberation is bound up in your liberation. None of us are free until all of us are free. So this is where it starts. After the service, we'll go, that's not quite next door, out, and we will break bread together. We will taste the food that connects us all to each other, the food that comes from and makes up this present paradise. We will sit together, and we will struggle, and we will take another step toward the beloved community, because I think around the table is where community really forms. It is where fellowship is really formed. It's not formed here in the sanctuary. You could come to service, you know, once a week, every week for 3 months and not feel part of the community. We feel part of the community when we sit down together, we break bread together, we share parts of our lives with each other, our real lives, the sorrows and the joys, the struggles and the easy parts. And then when we leave, we will take part of the community with us. In our stomachs and in our hearts. And that will nourish our work to bring the beloved community to the wider world so that no matter who you are, where you come from, or who you love, there is a seat for you at the table. Amen.